This is Internet Marketing.
Hi, Kelvin Newman here, founder of Brighton SEO, the world's largest specialist search marketing event, which takes place in the UK and in the US. So yeah, on today's episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast, we're going to be talking about something that's a subject that I'm really interested in. So it's technical SEO and it's site structure and rendering. So on today's episode, we've got Sally Raymer and Mark Stanford-Janes talking about some of those particular technical search issues that you may well want to make sure that you've got sorted on your website. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast. My name is Kelvin Newman. I'm joined today by two really interesting guests who I think we can have a really interesting discussion and conversation about site structure, rendering, and some of the more technical sides of SEO, which I know is a topic that many of you will be very interested in. Many of you will be completely new to. And in some cases, it'd be something that like is like a bit kind of, alien, I suppose, for want of a better description in terms of your experience. So I hope from that we'll get a really good sense of some of the areas you might want to be considering and some of the topics that are kind of keeping people who specialize in the more technical side of SEO, keeping them busy at the moment. So as I always do with these podcast episodes, I always get our guests to kind of introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about their background and how they came to be working in digital marketing and how they came to be having this conversation that we're having today. And yeah, I'll come to Mark first, if that's okay. Mark, can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be working in digital marketing and some of the areas you work in?
Yeah, hi everyone. I sort of fell into digital marketing about 6 years ago. Started off wanted to be a librarian and all went pear-shaped from there. Since then, done a little bit of everything in terms of tech SEO, migrations, IA restructures, a bit of JavaScript, you know. Yeah,
lots to keep you busy. Yeah, that route from a librarian to SEO is kind of an interesting one in a strange way, because I can kind of see that, but I'm not sure it's a route that lots have taken. But did you find that kind of that, like the experience or the desire to work in that kind of connected to, and is that why search marketing kind of resonated with you a bit?
Not really. It was basically I was the youngest person at the company, so like you can do the website, you can sort that out.
It went
from there.
We all find our way in it in our various different ways. How about yourself, Sally?
So I came into digital marketing, God, about 14 years ago, I think. And I know this because I had a recent conversation, like, how long have you been doing this? And it was actually a lifestyle choice. I was helping out my brother-in-law with his, he's a trader, he's a plumber. They needed help with their company. They weren't making any money for 3 years. And I had to think of creative ways to turn that around. So, I came in as a kind of all types of marketer. And I think about halfway through, I switched into I only want to do SEO. This is where my passion lies. And I've done everything from technical to leading content teams to, working on huge sites, working on tiny sites, working with sole traders and big corporations. E-commerce, the whole shebang, really.
And I think that variety is first obviously useful in terms of like practically if you're working as a freelancer, working as an agency, working brand side, having that kind of, you know, is kind of like it's a necessity in some cases, right? But even so, I think it's a really like a useful way of kind of grounding your knowledge, right? Even if you then do go on to specialize in some particular sector or some particular like niche of the niche, that kind of experience of doing lots of other stuff tends to be quite helpful, I think. Do you find that as well, Sally? Like that kind of, you know, doing a bit of everything's like giving you confidence to know what you know and yeah, the bits you enjoy and the bits you don't enjoy so much as well.
Definitely. I think there's definitely that aspect. I mean, I know what I really enjoy and I'm really reluctant to let go of any part of SEO, to be honest. There's definitely things I learn in one niche that I'm then able to kind of look at in a different aspect on another niche and learn from it. So yeah, it's really useful working in all these different sectors and all these different business sizes.
So we're going to be talking a bit about like site structure and rendering and kind of that side of search marketing today, because that's an area that I know that you've both got some interest in and obviously are involved in Brighton SEO talking around those sort of topics as well. But for kind of people who are perhaps newer to or have a like an overall sense of, well, here's what SEO is. What are some of the things, Mark, that you see from, you know, like from a site structure that people need to be considering from the get-go in terms of, you know, things that should be on their list to be thinking about and maybe common problems or common areas of opportunity to improve maybe?
Yeah, I mean, my maxim is always, if it can't crawl it, it can't index it. If it can't index, it can't get ranked. So like, yeah, then the basic thing is always to make sure everything's crawlable, everything's sort of linked from each other. It's all working together really nicely. Preferably HTML based, because you can get into a lot of problems down the line if you do everything via JavaScript. But yeah, I think sort of the main thing is make sure there's like a really nice like logical flow to your site as well. Everything sort of seems to relate to each other and looks really like nice together, basically, like a little tree, basically.
And is there kind of, yeah, like if you kind of got a website, someone's like they've got their website and they're kind of happy with how it's visually presenting itself. Is there kind of particular processes or steps to kind of go, well, to discover, is it being crawled? Is it being like, you know, like kind of like it might superficially look like it's okay. But what are some of the things that sometimes can be areas that like might to the first glance seem okay, but actually when you start to look under the hood can be some of the areas of, you know, concern or things to look at there, Mark?
Yep. First point of call is always Google Search Console. It's really useful for diagnosing sort of basic issues anyway, but it will flag any like 404 issues or 500s, anything like that, that comes up on your site. It's also good for diagnosing sort of JavaScript issues or like crawlability issues, because it will say like, oh, we couldn't crawl this properly. Oh, we weren't able to render this properly. And using like the inspection tool, which is built into it, again, it will try and sort of give you that impression of what Googlebot's seeing of your site, and if that's not matching what you're seeing, obviously you've got problems there.
And Sally, is Search Console something that's kind of like your first port of call there and things that you've kind of...
Definitely. You know, yeah. I mean, probably my first port of call when looking at a website is to work out Screaming Frog and then head straight over to Search Console and have a look at what's going on there. That page report is really useful because there's discovered not indexed, there's crawled not indexed, or give you an idea of what's going right and what's going wrong on the site straight away, for whether it's because you're producing the wrong type of content or because actually there's an internal linking and a structure problem with your site and Google's prioritizing the wrong content on your site. Or maybe it's prioritizing the right areas and it's such a huge site that you really have to be quite logical and quite determined with how you're structuring your site and your internal links to get everything discovered.
Because I think that was a lesson to me early on in my career that sort of not necessarily surprised me, but like, you know, as it was explained, made more sense, and suddenly kind of is one of these concepts that I found really useful when thinking about search, is that realizing that, well, what costs Google money, right? So what's the you know, Google as a search engine, you know, the natural search engine delivering those natural results, what are their expenses as a business? And it's kind of those servers going, you know, like looking at your website to get a copy of it, to understand what it's about and all the computations that they've then got to do off the back of that, and kind of understanding that they're not like, they don't, you know, it seems at times like they're, you know, they have infinite money, but that's not what it is at all, right? They're managing resource there, right? And that is that sort of like, does that feed into, is that kind of a fair reflection of some of the challenges around site architecture that people can face?
Definitely. I think no matter what size the site, you're going to have that issue, especially with enterprise sites. But even with smaller sites, I see the same problems present themselves because they might only have a couple of hundred pages, but they're clogging Google up with so much content they don't want to index that they never get to discover the content they really do want to index, which can be a major problem. Yeah, I think it's because Google's allocating this kind of imaginary budget to whichever website they're crawling, because it does cost them money to crawl sites and discover them and to render JavaScript and HTML.
Yeah, Mark, as you talked about JavaScript there, is that kind of like, yeah, is that like an area that like is easily done if you've not considered search in your like kind of process? And what are some of the ways in which you might, like for someone who might not even know what, you know, JavaScript is, or might not be mega familiar with the ways in which it's being used, what are some of the things that people might need to, you know, that might make them think that they should go and look into this potentially a bit more around JavaScript?
Yeah, so one thing you see with JavaScript all the time is it slows down pages a lot of time, particularly if you've got like loads of it, like loads of WordPress plugins. I think it's always a common culprit. Yeah, I can see you nodding there, Sally. Yeah. But basically, yeah, you want to look into sort of what the JavaScript's doing to your pages. Yeah, most of the time it will be like background things like plugins, or it'll be like tracking parameters, stuff like that. Google Tag Manager, all of those are sort of background things. And yeah, they will just slow down your page massively if they're allowed to just sort of go unchecked. What you can do when you sort of find these sort of issues is look into sort of deferring or asynchronously loading it. So this is sort of adding tags to these JavaScript files, and basically it tells it, don't do it straight away. Do it after the page is properly loaded, basically. And that will try and help your page speed. Another sort of common thing with JavaScript is that you'll have content that's being populated by it. So that means it's not visible in the initial HTML, but it's then sort of rendered later on, rendered via JavaScript, basically. That can be quite tricky for Google to actually find and index and crawl it properly. Because basically Google has to then take it away, spend the time rendering it, and then re-add that to its index, re-add that to its processing of the file. And that, yeah, can really make it tricky to pick up this sort of JavaScript populated content. So generally what I'd recommend is try and avoid having the main body of your content in that. Try and sort of keep that as light as possible. Obviously there are exceptions to that, but...
But I suppose that's it, isn't it? And that main bit is the bit that, like, trying to understand what's the bit that's unique to that page, I suppose, might be an interesting way of kind of framing that, right? Which is the kind of, well, what's the bits that are site-wide or section-wide? Then they're probably not the bits that the search engines are most interested in, right? And your users aren't, you know, at some extent there as well. Yeah, I suppose that's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's kind of like going, well, what do we want the search engine and customer to, you know, the user to be here? And I suppose... Is it fair to say that usually this is pretty well aligned with usability and kind of, you were talking about site speed and that being kind of obviously, you know, there's lots of reasons to be doing site speed beyond, like, because you might do a bit better in the search engines. But is it often quite well aligned, or is there examples where actually it's like, well, we wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't with our SEO hat kind of on?
Yeah, I mean, as always, it depends. I think most of the time, yeah, it's fairly aligned. Like, most of the time you're not using a heavily JavaScript based page, so it won't interfere that much. It's normally like functionality in terms of making your menus look fancier, making things a bit more sort of UX friendly. So it can make it a bit nicer, but at the end of the day, it doesn't affect too much for a normal site, I would say, or traditional site.
And Sally, is that kind of like, yeah, you're kind of like, is there a tension there between kind of usability and technical SEO, or does it tend to be like actually they're often looking for similar things, or is it just a slightly different perspective?
I think there probably is a tension in terms of how users want a site to interact and be interactable, and how Google have this pressure to have faster performing pages that require, well, they're not pressuring us to require less JavaScript directly, but because of the speed, they are. And genuinely, we are going to find that there's unavoidable losses in page speed compared to having that UX feature on the page. And yeah, I think if you're talking about a kind of standard WordPress site, then yeah, you're not going to have too much tension there. But I think a lot of the big brand names who are using maybe headless CMSs and some of the more modern website platforms are going to have that tension, definitely. They're going to want this really sleek platform that gets, especially an e-commerce or marketplace site, that gets a product to them quickly, that shows every feature that that user wants to use. And that's really going to compete with having a technical SEO friendly site. And there's going to have to be priorities and give and take and compromise on both sides.
And I know kind of enterprise, information architecture is one of the topics that kind of you're interested in there. Is that kind of, you know, information and architecture is one that we perhaps haven't really kind of discussed today yet in terms of the structure of the website. What's kind of information architecture? What are kind of, I suppose, for someone who's not got any familiarity with information architecture or kind of a, like a basic level of appreciation of that, what is that discipline, what is that kind of approach, and how might like that feed into on-site SEO and that
so when we're talking about information architecture, we're talking about how users and search engines access the pages on your site. So we're not just talking about the top navigation, we're not talking about the footer links, they're the least important area of the site. We're actually talking about the links everywhere on your site. So And it simply is the internal links, so wherever they're placed, but that structures your whole site. It tells you what's more important on your site. It tells users where to go. And it can mean that some areas of your site never get discovered if they don't have internal links pointing to them or links from anywhere else pointing to them. So basically, in a nutshell, your information architecture is your internal link system.
Mm. And I suppose, yeah, so and I suppose it's one of those ones that's very easy to never really think about that, right? So you're just adding the new pages, they're in your content management system. You know, you've maybe sort of got the like silo where that sort of bit of the website lives, and it might be quite well linked within that. But is it easy for sometimes them to be a bit sort of then disconnected from the broader website? Is it something that you kind of need to go back to and look at the pages you've got and how things should be connected?
Definitely. I've seen examples where you might have a website, for example, let's say that's selling boots, but they've got loads of these informational blog articles on fashion trends because that's part of their audience, right? They want to reach that audience that's interested in fashion trends, but it's not really got anything to do with their core offering. So yeah, and they haven't really thought about that structure. So they might have this whole blog section where it's taken away from the main navigation. They have another kind of UX there completely. All these blog articles are linking to each other, but they're not linking very well back to the products. And therefore, and because they're really informative articles that are useful to the user, that's ranking for their site, and search engines aren't actually getting that their primary purpose is to sell boots. They might be thinking, actually, they've got all of this good content that have way more links, unique links and contextual links pointing to it, that, yeah, I think they're a fashion trends information site.
Yeah, and I suppose also in that, yeah, you've got this then as well, that you're like, if you're doing all of the things that the search engines are looking for, you're kind of, it's self-reinforcing, right, isn't it? So it's kind of, it's being published frequently, there's change, yeah. Which, like, ultimately, that's often what the search engines crawling are looking for, right? And if you're kind of going, you know, rightly, you know, that from a search engine, it's easy to misdiagnose that, right?
Definitely. Yeah, I think, yeah, so it can be done without really thinking about it and have the adverse effect where you're like, oh, I'm ranking for all these informational terms, but I'm not actually selling products. I'm really struggling here. And it's because you haven't carefully thought about the internal link structure.
And Mark, I know rendering is kind of a topic that you're kind of interested in and, like, you know, going to be speaking at Brighton SEO about in terms of, you know, the challenges that presents. What's some of the kind of like common things there that, you know, the topics that you'd be discussing there and that people need to be thinking about specifically on the rendering process? And I suppose explaining what rendering is as well is kind of not a terrible place to start there.
Yes. Yeah, so rendering is basically sort of putting everything together to make a usable web page. It's taking the HTML, it's taking the CSS, taking JavaScript, taking everything else and just sort of throwing it all together and trying to generate the page from it. Nowadays, there's loads of different types of rendering and they seem to be new ones cropping up every day at this point. But the main ones sort of fall into sort of two areas, server-side or client-side rendering. Those are sort of the two pillars, essentially. So client-side is when everything's sort of passed to the browser and rendered straight there. Whereas server-side is it's all done on a server and then just you're given a straight HTML in your browser. These basically work in two different ways for search engines. Obviously, client-side isn't the traditional method, and that's what requires sort of JavaScript to populate and the second stage of sort of Google indexing it and slowing everything down. Whereas server-side, it should technically give Google just a straight HTML. It doesn't need to then render any of the scripts on it. It should be able to read it nice and easily. Now, as I said, those are sort of the two ones. There's other, like, more specific methods of rendering as well. So things like rehydration, isomorphic, pre-rendering. I'm not going to get into too many details on them because I think I could spend the rest of the podcast talking about that, just because there's so many. But essentially, these are sort of slightly different methods of taking these two basic ideas to try and make them even more JavaScript friendly, easier to implement, or SEO friendly in some cases, which is really nice to see that people are thinking about that. Mm. But
I suppose it's useful to know that, yeah, there's kind of, there's, yeah, I suppose they're two maybe ends of a spectrum as maybe as a way of doing it. And like the reality is, it's like, well, it'll be nice if things neatly fit into these kind of categories. But often there's kind of like, yeah, the solutions have merged to kind of go, well, let's get this bit of this and this bit of that. And it ends up with, yeah, alternatives there and thinking about how, you know, how that's going to interact with usability and site speed and, yeah, and technical SEO, I think, is a really interesting one. So, yeah, I found that really interesting. I think there's a lot to it, and it is one of these topics where being aware it's an issue is important, and, like, understanding all the edge cases of where this interacting with that is, you know, that, and that's the craft, isn't it, of technical SEO, is kind of going, well, what, how, you know, in this particular set of circumstances, what are we doing with this particular customer set and this particular user need, is always really exciting. So when I kind of have guests on the show, I'm always interested to kind of find new resources or new places to go off and add to the list to kind of keep up to date, potentially around this, maybe something completely different in fact. So yeah, Sally, is there kind of like a particular resource or website or book or podcast or somewhere you might recommend people, if they've enjoyed some of the, you know, enjoyed listening to us today, that you'd recommend they go off and check out?
When I was starting in SEO, I swore by Moz, Moz's blog, and I still do go back to the Moz blog quite often. So I'd say that's a brilliant resource.
Yeah, I think, yeah, their beginner's guide particularly is one of those, it's one of these like things that they've kept on top of over the years. And I think that always, yeah, like you say, it's my, you know, people are like, well, what is SEO? It's like, do you know what I can explain? But actually, they've done, there's a lot of work that's gone into that. They're better at it than I am. So yeah, go do that. That's, yeah, definitely a good one to check out there. That's fantastic. And how about yourself, Mark? Any particular places you'd recommend that people?
If you're interested in sort of rendering in particular, I'd recommend patterns.dev. It's a really good sort of breakdown of various different methods, how they all work, and has lots of diagrams and pictures, which makes it a lot easier to understand. Because yeah, normally I read like a wall of text, I'm like, didn't get any of that.
But
show me a nice
resource to explain how. Yeah, so that's a good recommendation. We'll definitely make sure that we include those in the show notes. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can see them in the notes below, and if you're on the various audio podcast platforms, it'll be in those places as well. But yeah, in terms of like people keeping in touch and seeing what you're up to, Mark, if people have enjoyed listening to you today, what would be the best ways to kind of keep aware of what you're up to and potentially get in contact as well?
Yep. So I'm on LinkedIn, and that's probably my easiest place to contact me. I do have a Twitter or X account, but I can't say I check it as often. So,
cool. Yeah, so LinkedIn, yeah, we'll make sure we link through to Mark's LinkedIn there. And how about yourself, Sally?
I'm also on LinkedIn and a number of other channels, but LinkedIn's where I'm mainly.
Fantastic. Cool. Well, definitely worth checking out both of our guests' LinkedIn accounts and dropping them a line and seeing how they're getting on there as well. And obviously I'm looking forward to their talks at Brighton SEO as well. So thanks very much for joining us today. We will be back again very soon with another episode. I hope you've enjoyed today's show and learned a little bit more about technical SEO, rendering and site structure, and how that might be having some impact on your digital marketing approach. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Calvin.
Thanks so much for joining us for today's episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast, produced by the team behind Brighton SEO, the world's largest specialist digital marketing conference covering SEO, PPC, paid social, web analytics, and content marketing. If you want to find out more about us and the show, you can check out the website, internetmarketingpodcast.org. And if you've not already subscribed to the show, you should hit that subscribe button. And can I ask a favour, if you are subscribed and you're enjoying the show, can you leave us a review wherever you're watching or listening to the show? And if you want to get in touch, become a guest on the show, or just generally feedback about what we're doing, you can always email me. That's kelvin@brightonseo.com. So kelvin@brightonseo.com. Or of course, you can contact me on social media. So at LinkedIn or Twitter, my usernames are Kelvin Newman. See you soon.